The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The Broncos have been in three overtime games this year. They won them all. Got him at the 40. It's Thomas at the 50. Stiffer and got him three to the 30. To the 20. Thomas to the 10. Denver's going on to New England. They win it on the first play of overtime.
8 years later, and that play, an 80-yard connection between a second-year quarterback and a second-year wide receiver, remains one of the NFL's most shocking moments and the height of Tebow mania. The Steelers-Broncos wildcard matchup on CBS from January 2012 is as rewatchable as they come. It included one of the most storied franchises in the sport, fresh off a Super Bowl appearance the year before, going up against, well, Tim Tebow. Two frequent Pick Six podcast guests just so happen to be a part of that game and will help us relive it on this special episode. Brady Quinn was Tebow's backup on the Broncos.
What you learned about Tim was he was a gamer, because whatever you saw during that week, you were like, man, how are we going to win? And then he'd figure out a way to do it.
And Brian McFadden was tasked with stopping Tebow as part of the Steelers secondary.
We all knew what Tim Tebow couldn't do, and we all knew what he could do. And we felt like the things he could do shouldn't beat us.
What was the play call that sent the football world into a frenzy and led to this episode? Don't worry, Brady brought his playbook. Join us as we take you from the locker room to the sidelines to the field, recapturing this epic game. We'll get to January 8th in just a minute, but in order to tell the story, we have to start before the season even began, during the 2011 lockout.
It really didn't affect us at all, because we kind of were preparing for it. And I remember at that time there were a few guys that weren't currently under contract, so they couldn't participate. But yet and still, they were able to be with us during training camp. They were watching basically as a fan, working out on their own, not being involved in meetings. But we knew eventually if we came to terms with a new agreement regarding the CBA, they would be right with us. And also, too, Will, you got to look at it like this. All 32 teams were going through the same thing. So it wasn't like there were a few ball clubs that had to endure this lockout, this unfamiliar situation. We all were going through it, and we saw that as such, and we just kind of tried to get better with the players that were out there with us.
You guys had the same sort of issue, Brady, in Denver, but maybe a little bit exacerbated, because you had John Elway, John Fox coming in. Man, Foxy. Is Foxy a top five all-time, like, NFL coach you want to drink Coors Light with?
I would say he's right up there. He might be top three. In my opinion, maybe the number one that I want to drink with that I played for. So we were an entirely different position as a team. We had just moved on from Josh McDaniels the year before. Personally, that was the guy who traded for me for that year. So I was dealing with another new head coach. Our team was dealing with not only a new head coach, but one that really couldn't start to create the environment that I think he was looking to bring back to Denver with a lot of success they've had throughout their history, without, you know, not having an off season. So, that was on hold. Any offensive changes we were going to make, considering now it was going to be Mike McCoy, who was previously the offensive coordinator, but now he was actually going to be calling the plays along with Adam Gase helping him. That was put on hold, even though we were trying to get, you know, our playbook. I'd stop off and grab the playbook from Adam Gase's house. And then, you know, I'd take that to a lot of our workouts to kind of install and go through. You know, Kyle Orton thought he was going to get traded. In fact, they thought a deal was done with the Dolphins. It ended up falling through, before we ended up coming back as a group, for training camp. But, there was just a lot of things up in the air. There was a lot of things that were kind of molding and changing. And, as a team, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, we were pretty happy with was Brian Dawkins, one of the leaders on our team, put together this group that worked out of Valor Christian High School. And so, you know, while a lot of the teams maybe were doing similar things, we had a solid group of 20 to 40 guys, depending on the day, out there working out with, ironically, now their strength coach, Lauren Landau. He was a guy who was a performance trainer back then, for guys outside of, you know, who was Rich Tootin, who was the strength coach. But he ended up taking over and running really during that offseason our sports kind of conditioning program that helped prepare us for that season.
I mean, the Broncos were 8-8, and in fact, started out the season. It's the weirdest season. I mean, it's an unforgettable season. But you know, you guys started what, like, I think it was 1-4, Brady, and right. Then ripped off 7 wins in 8 games and lost 3 games to close it out. I mean, there's no way you guys felt going into the playoffs you were Super Bowl contenders, right?
No. So, I mean, to really understand that season, again, you have to look at everything from the lockout, heading into training camp, the before the bye, and then what transpired after. So, you know, we were a 1-4 team beforehand. We were really just trying to kind of find our way and find our rhythm and find our identity as a team. Well, they made the change at quarterback to have Tebow take over, and largely it was, you know, brought on by the fan base there. I don't know that you would have watched preseason or watched training camp and thought there was any reason otherwise to have him running the offense. And that first game there in Miami, it was rough until about the last 4 or 5 minutes, where a lot of things went our way and we were able to kind of, you know, end up coming back to win that game. And then the next week we got absolutely pummeled by Detroit the following week. And then the magic happened. I mean, we went on this ridiculous run where we had a top 2 defense in the league. Willis McGahee really became the featured running back, and Tim, you know, finding ways to keep us in ball games, not really turning the football over, and then making plays with his legs at the end of games to help win games. And then incredible kicking by Matt Prater led us on this magical, like I think you said, it's 7 out of 8 games where, look, we were not a great football team, but we like found ways to win. Like, we were not good on third down. We were great in short yardage goal line because of Tim's running ability, but we weren't necessarily great in the red zone. Defensively, we were solid, and we could run the crap out of the football. And so we found our identity, and then we hit the last 3 games. And that was where, like, things just fell apart. Teams played the exact same coverage that Detroit played, basically off man with inside leverage on the cornerbacks, especially on the single receiver side. And we lost to New England. We lost to Buffalo. We lost to Kansas City, all doing the exact same thing. And that's where things started to fall apart. And we finished 8-8, but won a tiebreaker because of the Oakland Raiders at the time lost to, I want to say it was San Diego, at home. So that ended up giving us the tiebreaker 8-8 to win the division and host a playoff game.
We could really do an entire different, like, separate history on Tebow Mania.
If you could have saw practice, if you could have seen, I mean, even some of the preseason stuff, like, you're just going, like, there's no, like, I mean, there was times in practice where players would get so frustrated. I remember Knowshon Moreno, I think, you know, he threw a ball to him on, like, a check down or something and missed him, and Knowshon picked the ball up and, like, punted it over the fence. And I was just myself. Like, I can see the frustration. I remember when John Fox got hit in the back, the ball that skipped and routes on air, and the reporters were facing the quarterbacks watching us throw, and, you know, he had said, "Who was that?" And they were like, "Oh, that was, you know, Tebow," and he was like, "Oh," and he just kind of turned around, and from that point moving forward, it was like a foul ball getting hit your way. You know, you're like, so that was the crazy thing was, what you learned about Tim was he was a gamer, because whatever you saw during that week, you were like, man, how are we going to win? And then he'd figure out a way to do it. Like, he would get in the game and he would wear teams down and he would be tough and he'd find a way of scrambling and making some things happen at the end of the game. So it was a crazy season the way it all finished. And honestly, like, losing the last 3, and especially to Kansas City at the end of the year, which Orton got, you know, I believe he got released at that point, signed with Kansas City. So he ends up beating us in Denver, yeah. Low scoring game,
but 7-3.
It was a weird feeling the way the season ended. And then us like jogging off the field, but then seeing that Oakland lost. And so then they brought us back out for the fans, and like, guys were kind of mixed emotions because they're like, cool, we won the division, but we like lost the last 3 and we're 8-8. You're 500. Like, you're not sure how to feel and excited about being able to host a playoff game.
Meanwhile, the Steelers, you know, they come off the Super Bowl loss. They're back in the playoffs. But going into the playoffs,
were you sure that Ben Roethlisberger was going to play? He had been battling ankle injuries.
But the big question right now is Ben Roethlisberger and that ankle. You've been watching him in warm-ups. What have you seen so far?
I thought he was extremely careful during warm-ups. Twisting on that left ankle is a big deal. I've watched him since he's been back and played with that injury. He's been inaccurate throwing the football, can't move around as well. And when he can't move around as well, that means, Jim, he's going to take a few more chances throwing the football because he can't escape the trouble. So it's something to watch very closely.
You know, 10-3 coming in as his career as a postseason. Charlie Batch is the backup. But did you guys think Ben was going to be good to go for that playoff game in Denver?
Not clearly, you know, 85% or 90%, but we knew he would be good enough to go. That's the thing about Ben, that entire season, throughout his career there at that point, you know, he's been a guy who's always been battle tested when it comes to injuries, and he might not participate in any snaps throughout the week of, but game time, he's going to hobble and limp out and he's going to give it his all. But honestly, we felt like how well we played going against the Denver Broncos that had an elite, a real good defense, ran the ball well, but the uncertainty at the quarterback position, we felt like we were good enough to beat the Broncos, even if Big Ben, you know, wasn't healthy or if he didn't have a outstanding game. You know, we felt like defensively we should be able to weather the storm because it wasn't a lot that the Broncos did. And I know Brady can talk about this, especially when Tebow jumped into the lineup. Everything was – it was simplified. Now you had to deal with a versatile, athletic, powerful runner at the quarterback position. But when it came to the throwing game, the passing game, they simplified a lot. And we felt like we had a pretty good game plan. And I know we will talk about the highs and the lows throughout that ball game, but we felt like we had a pretty good game plan, even with Ben not being 100%.
Yeah, let's get to the game then.
Hello, friends. Jim Nantz along with Super Bowl 21 MVP Phil Simms. We're here in Denver. We're getting set for what should be a most exciting game. And,
you know, this is 4:40 local time. I remember I was living in Greensboro at the time, and I remember where I was sitting in our condo in Greensboro watching it. Like it was one of those games that you sort of remember where you are because we, like Brady talked about, we knew that Tebow was not good, but he somehow like managed to have these gamer moments. So when we start, you know, asking you about, like about this, what are your memories about the, you know, that specific game? Like, you know, like you go to Denver, BMAC, and do you see a bunch of terrible towels? I mean, like what was running through your mind as you guys got to Denver?
Well, of course, the altitude, that's something that has always been emphasized for us. You know, I played out in Denver a few times in my career, you know, just talking about the altitude and making sure you prepared. In that particular ball game, Ryan Clark didn't play for us. Because the last time we played in Denver, he had some issues medically, and they basically said, anytime we play in Denver, Ryan, you cannot play. We don't care what's at stake. You can't play. And Ryan was a huge part of our defense, not just when it came to his production guys, but the way he communicated, the way he talked. And I think, Ryan Mundy started in place of Ryan Clark. So going into the ball game, it was like, we're playing without our starting quarterback on the defense side. Just for communicating that he did was so important on all three levels. But yet and still, we felt like, you know what, we still have the guys, we still have the horses to get the job done.
So, Brady, did you know, I think there was reports going on at the time that you were splitting reps with Tebow.
By the way, we were at practice on Friday. All you've been reading about all weekend is how he shared snaps with Brady Quinn in practice on Friday. Wasn't the same practice we were watching, was it?
I saw Brady Quinn take two snaps, which apparently is what he does every Friday afternoon.
Like that, were you thinking that you might start, that you might be part of the game plan? Because, I mean, again, like you mentioned, like defenses had just come up with this plan to stop Tebow, and it was just working the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, we were splitting some reps in practice, and in particular on third down, because that was our weakness. You know, we were, I think, ended up being 30th in the league heading into, at least from the regular season, but we were actually worse than that, because I think we were converting like 26-27%, somewhere in that ballpark of our third downs when Tebow took over, and so we were probably dead last in the league. Like, we were not a good football team on third down. So their idea was, okay, we're going to put in this package where you'll go in and you'll basically go in to throw the football. And my rebuttal to them was, that sounds great, but isn't that pretty predictable, especially to do versus one of the better teams in the NFL in the playoffs? So we've got to disguise it somehow. So they came up with this thing called the Irish package. And I actually sent out this like part of our game plan. So Tim and I were actually in the game at the same time. And we had, you know, a play or two, one of which that was in third down from like third and four to six, called gun empty right, QB run, alert FIP, 80 hot, F drive bullets. And so essentially the concept was, depending on the look that we got from the Steelers, Tim would either run the football or out of an empty formation, or I would come back and I would actually run 80 hot F drive bullets, which was essentially you had the running back free releasing out of the backfield. You had a little, you know, short spot route, and then you had the drive but really just kind of a clear route. And then you had the drive concept coming from the other side. And so that was one of our plays. The other one we had was one called gun empty right, all hit, 78 all hitch. And it was alert QB run. And the same thing, Tim and I in the game at the same time. He would essentially run if it was there. If not, I'd come back in and I'd throw the football. Everyone was running a hitch unless they were impressed, and we'd run, you know, fade adjust. So there's a couple different plays like that out of this Irish package. And then there was just straight third down plays that were in the more normal drop back passing game that were concepts that I was familiar with and we thought were good against versus the Steelers. Because again, we had done so bad on third down coming into that game. And that's where the funny thing is about now, like fast forwarding into the first half, we had so much success on first and second down, which is why you never saw any of that. And I remember halftime that, you know, we kind of shelved some of those because we were getting chunks on first and second down. For the game, I think we ended up being like 3 of 10. We were still bad. But we had, I want to say if we had 400, and I think Debo had this stat, and maybe you can chime in, of like the 466 yards of total offense.
368 of 447 yards in that game came on first and second down.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brady, you know what? I remember that package that you're talking about, because we kind of came up with a package the week of preparing for that from you guys. And it was basically a straight dime package. I think we might have had either six DBs in the ball game because we were preparing for the pass. And it's ironic that you mentioned that, because I totally forgot about that. But yeah, like you said, you guys had so much success on first and second down, especially first down. I mean, you guys were in manageable third down situations. It was like third and three, third and four. And you know, in those type of deals, especially with a running quarterback, you got a two-way option. If you want to throw the ball, if you want to run the ball. But we had a horrible outing first and second down, and that going against your offense, especially with Tebow at the quarterback position, first down was the most important down. We felt like first down was more important than third down, because if we can get you in a third and long situation with Tebow, the likelihood of him converting those opportunities, clearly we didn't think he can do it consistently for four quarters.
Can they make the stop here? Rolling out, Tebow, Polamalu coming in on him, pass throw, and it's knocked away by William Gay.
Yeah, I mean, the game plan strategy, I'll read you our third down because I'm looking at the game.
And by the way, for those, you know, Brady has the play sheet here, which is kind of cool. It's like, you know, I keep my Super Bowl programs. Brady keeps his, do you have all your play sheets?
Yeah. I usually would ask for paper copies of everything because they try to give you those iPads, and I just be like, yeah, you know, I'm more of the type of learner where I've got to write it down and draw on it and all that sort of whole thing.
Me too.
Create a library of all the playbooks. So I've got it all. And that's why, you know, those coordinators and all these guys, I'd hand in those empty binders, or I'd fill it with just like white blank pages that I'd hole punch and put in the binder to make it look like the actual sheets were back in there. But yeah, so third and seven plus, which, you know, I think Bryant would tell you that's typically when defenses are looking and saying, all right, the offense has to pass in this case. Like gun, two bang, zig, 64 Z bundle flare. That was a concept that I felt comfortable with running. Gun trips right, 64 shot X, slim slam, same thing. 66 F spinner, pacer, Ringo. You know, those are all, you know, plays. 82 bun, X go, or excuse me, bun, go, X sticky, lucky. We actually took a shot. Tebow did later on in the game on a third down that he missed on that particular play. But all those plays were things that, you know, I felt comfortable with running, and as well as Tim. And then if you look at our third and 10 plus, it was basically three plays. There was a screen. There was basically a completion play called Gotti. We've got the slot running an option route and then hopefully going to catch and run after. And then we had a play called gun 482 sticker, double close, alert QB 82 draw. So essentially probably getting the look there for the draw, given that, you know, Pittsburgh liked to run a lot of like two man and then that third and 10 plus situation and then 33 buzz, which allowed you the opportunities to have a light box to be able to run a draw. So essentially a screen and a draw in those two scenarios. So that was
So third and 10 was like, remember when John Fox punted on like he punted with the Bears in Seattle when he had Jimmy Clausen? He's like, but like third and 10 or longer, you're just giving up.
Right. We're essentially trying to run a low risk, high reward play, meaning if we run a draw, if we run a screen, if we run any of that stuff, there's the likelihood that we'll get a catch or we'll get something going, but can we get 10 yards? Maybe not, but we keep the clock running and then we preserve our right to punt and play the field position battle.
B-Mac, what's it like when you're playing a team that's utilizing the option and the quarterback running and all of that, and you mentioned like you just felt like you guys couldn't tackle. Did you feel like you guys were like wearing skates or on your heels? Like what was the feeling as a team, especially one of the top defenses in football?
The feeling going into the ball game was, you know, at that time in 2011, you didn't really see quarterbacks play like Tim Tebow, right? Yeah. You know, you had a few athletic quarterbacks, but with Tim Tebow, we knew he didn't mind running the football like a running back if need be. So the way we went about our business was make him stay in the pocket. Containment was very, very important on Tim Tebow. And in the secondary, you might be called to cover a lot longer than what you usually are called to do because Tim Tebow can extend plays.
Second and 12. Tebow somehow able to get out of it. Fires it down.
He could make defenders miss. We basically treated Tim Tebow as a running back more than a quarterback because at that time, going into that playoff game, watching tape on Tim Tebow, his running energized the offense. His running energized the entire team. And we didn't want that to become a problem for us on the road with how he goes about his business and the energy that he played with. And he felt more comfortable running the football and getting hit. And when he got hit, it seemed like that's what he wanted and he wanted more of. So for us, defensively, it was like, man, listen, this is a physical guy. You don't see him. We can't treat him as a quarterback. You know how most guys see Big Ben as a slippery guy. It's hard to bring him down in the pocket. We felt like Tim Tebow had the same skill set, but he was more powerful.
Can I ask something? Because I want to go back to the preparation leading up to that week because yeah. I'm like looking through the types of coverages, in particular, like third down, for example, you guys play. You guys were more of a zone, a post-high zone team. You mixed in a little bit of two-man, and then you mixed in a little bit of man two, like third and 7-10. But like we had been getting all off-man coverage from everyone the 3 weeks before us. And I know that might not have fit in the wheelhouse of exactly what you guys did, but did you guys not look at that and say, all right, like this is just what we need to do in order to beat them and say, let's just run that the entire game? Because that was one of the things that I think I remember watching in the first half saying, we're starting to have success in the second quarter. And I think it took us the first quarter to get adjusted because we just thought everyone would play us that way, like the rest of the playoffs and the rest of the way, because it was so effective versus us. But you guys didn't really do that in the first half.
Yeah, I think going into that ball game defensively, you know, we had a pretty good defense. It wasn't one of the best that we had in years past, but it was a pretty good defense. And we wanted to be disruptive against the wide receivers, especially, you know, DT. And Ike Taylor at that time was following Demaryius, I think, that entire ball game. And we knew that Demaryius Thomas was the go-to for Tim Tebow. And then, of course, Eddie Royal started to show his worth. But we wanted to do what we've been doing the entire weeks leading up to that ball game. And I think for us, honestly, we started to really, before the game kicked off, we were like, Tim Tebow can't beat us. That was our thought process. Regardless of what we've seen from other teams and how they want to get about their business, if we play our style of football, he cannot beat us. And we kind of, I won't say we were too confident, but we kind of were as a unit, as an entire team, especially going against Tim Tebow, because we saw so many liabilities from him as a passer. And Brady, you can contest this as well, being in the league for such a long time, playing the quarterback position. We all knew what Tim Tebow couldn't do, and we all knew what he could do. And we felt like the things he could do shouldn't beat us.
They talk about turnovers so much. He misses passes because he just is ultra conservative in his judgment.
And this is a loaded team, too, for the Steelers, by the way. Troy Polamalu, James Harrison, Lawrence Timmons, James Ferrier, Lamar Woodley, Larry Foote, Ryan Clark, you said, didn't play. He had that blood disorder. William Gay, Ike Taylor, B-Mac, of course, Brett Kiesel, Casey Hampton. Casey Hayward was a rookie back then, that loaded 2011 draft class. And, you know, this, you like you got the Steelers are favored by 7.5 points on the road in a playoff game. Like, that's that's a two-touchdown, you know, spread in a neutral game.
And the majority of guys you talked about mentioned from that defense, we all were basically there last year when, you know, we went toe-to-toe with the Green Bay Packers and basically spotted them 18 points in the first half and fought back but lost the ball game. So, yeah, we were a pretty loaded unit. The majority of the guys that was on that team also was a part of the 08 championship team. So that's why I said what I said. It was almost like we kind of were too confident, especially going against Tim Tebow.
That'll give Tim Tebow tremendous confidence and John Fox to stay with his game plan.
Yeah, and I mean, like most of these guys, not, I mean, a little bit older, but not crazy older. Like, you know, I mean, you were 30 at the time. Let's see, like James Ferrier was 36, which is insane. And, you know, Casey Hampton, 34, Kiesel, 33. But I mean, like, you're not talking about like guys who are, you know, exactly ancient in terms of football years. So as the game moved along, Brady, what was the sense on the sidelines? You know, you watching it, you can see like Tebow is getting fired up and he's doing the rah-rah Tebow stuff on the sidelines, you know, just famous for the eye black and the gator chomp in college. And he's sort of like, you can tell he buys into the emotions of it all. I mean,
well, it's an emotional game. And right now the emotion, without a doubt, is on the side of the Denver Broncos.
Are you guys sort of buying into this idea? You're just looking around like, you know, whatever, like it's happening again.
I know it's not that. I don't know if Brian would speak this or not, but in all honesty, like the first couple weeks when he got in there, guys were frustrated because it almost felt like he was more into the rah-rah, like yelling and all that stuff than doing what he was supposed to do from an execution standpoint. So that kind of stuff, you're just like, all right, he's just yelling and screaming again. You know, I think we were more excited about even going back once we got into the playoff, just knowing that and really John Fox preaching to, like, it's sudden death, man. Anything can happen once you get into playoffs. And especially a team that plays the style of football that we did with Tim and some of the things he would do late in games, the way we ran the football and the defense, you just kind of felt like it might be a tough out for some teams because it's a unique style. And then once we got up, I think we jumped out to like a 20-6 lead.
Yep.
I think we looked at our defense, we looked at our rushing attack, and we're like, dude, we could hold on to this thing. Like we weren't like the type of team that was playing for many leads. And so we felt like we could hold on and easily manage this game, take care of the football, play good defense, and then maybe find a couple more big plays, and make something happen to win this game. So we felt confident at that point, given where the game was at.
Yeah. So like, so the opening of the second quarter, Eric Decker had been knocked out on the first play of the second quarter.
Fires it. Has the completion. Ball is out. Decker just pounded on the completion. He was walloped by Monday and Harrison.
Cheap shot by Harrison, right?
Yes.
And
I don't remember a cheap shot by James Harrison.
You had a wide receiver running across the field. Harrison dropped in the coverage and literally went after his knees. Like, come on, man.
I don't remember that.
This is a quintessential quarterback defensive back debate on a hard hit in the early 2000s. So then Demaryius Thomas catches a long play on the very next play. Tebow hits DT for 51 yards, right?
Tebow launches the long ball for Thomas. Demaryius Thomas has the catch at the 30-yard line of Pittsburgh. The play they've been waiting for weeks.
One of the third downs, I thought he hit DT for a really big play.
Yeah, it was third and 12.
Yes, on the third and 12. That was what I was referring to. There's obviously two really big plays to DT in this game. That was one of them, though.
Three. There were three big plays.
Well, I just meant as far as like touchdowns, kind of game, not game altering, but like to me, like almost momentum swings. And so
But I was going to say like both of the touchdowns in the second quarter were set up by 50 plus yard passes to Demaryius Thomas, who's guarded by Ike Taylor.
That's what Denver does well. Play fake, second and 7. Tebow down the field. Thomas has it in stride. Tries to get away from Taylor. Cuts back twice on him and takes Taylor with him to the ground at the 13. He beats Ike Taylor for another long one.
Did you guys identify something there, or is it just like sort of blind luck, like DT was able to get open on him?
Well, no. So DT was our X. So he was our X wide receiver. So we had to simplify things. So it wasn't so much of like, oh, we thought Ike Taylor versus DT was a good matchup. It was more like, well, that was just where we went if we got post high safety. Like, if you're taking the shot, you're taking the shot. If not, he was probably going to scramble around and run.
So it's Tim looks, and if the look isn't there, then he just takes off and runs.
Pretty much. Like, we simplified things to the point where if it was too high, it was throw to this guy or run. And if it was one high, throw to this guy or run. There might have been a couple of occasions where there was maybe a 1-2. But for the most part, like, we wanted to tap into his ability to be able to scramble and make plays with his legs because obviously it was working for us that season.
And for us, you know, the first quarter was more like AFC North football. It was slow. It was generic. Good defense running the football. And then I don't know what happened in the second quarter, but it felt like the momentum shifts in favor of the Denver Broncos.
And Tebow into the end zone, and Bell is caught by Eddie Royal. Was he in? Yes! Touchdown, Broncos!
And the thing about Royal, just watching him, he was very, very shifty.
Yeah.
He commanded the slot well, and he caught the ball well, and he fought hard. And Tebow and Royal kind of had a relationship already established, especially the damage he did in the slot, being able to create separation from defenders. But that play, that third touchdown play to Eddie Royal, it was like it kicked down the momentum door. And then throughout the second quarter, it was like our defense couldn't do anything. It was like we couldn't tackle well. We couldn't keep contained. We couldn't cover. Everything went wrong for our defense, and everything went right for Denver.
Yeah, so you get the two touchdowns. Tebow ran for the second one, as you mentioned.
Second and six. Tebow, there he is, taking off Bill. He's got the first down. He's got the touchdown. Tim Tebow takes it across, and the Broncos have a second touchdown.
And then get a roughing the passer penalty on James Harrison at some point in the second quarter that sets up a Matt Prater 20-yard field goal. And then before the half ended, you got another Prater field goal tacked on with like a minute 08. That made it 20-6. So going into halftime, BMAC, I mean, are y'all looking around like how do we give up 20 points to Tim Tebow in the first half? I mean, are there fingers being pointed? Is everybody calm and cool? Like, what was the vibe? Because I mean, again, you guys were 8-point favorites and you're down by two touchdowns to a one trick pony.
We went into the halftime like, yo, all right, are we ready to play football? Because you guys talked about, you know, the first scoring drive, the Eddie Royal touchdown reception was sustainable conversions. But outside of that, it were big plays that led to the other points. You know, we just needed to eliminate the big plays. Granted, it could come from Tim Tebow.
Oh, that was what it was. I said we weren't converting on third down, bro. It's just first and second down.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't stop it before it started.
And remember, and that's what I said earlier. Going into the ball game, I said, which is not usually the case when it comes to defensive preparations, we felt like first down was more important than third down. And in the first half, we didn't do a great job on first down or second down. And because of that, usually when you see an offense that when they're horrible in third downs, they don't score points. But you guys were so good on first and second down. And of course, you factor in some of the big plays. You didn't need to be good on third down. And it showed in the first half.
Yeah, second half obviously much better for Pittsburgh, particularly in the third quarter. Not again like a slower quarter, but Mike Wallace scored an end around.
It's Wallace taking it around the right side for the touchdown.
With 4 minutes and 33 seconds left, it originally been Isaac Redman had broken off a 32-yard run. I mean, was it the sense, Brady, where like this second half is, hey, we just like, you know, you mentioned we got a good defense. We can run the ball. Is it just like, we're just holding on for dear life and hoping that Ben doesn't engineer some comeback?
Yeah. I mean, I think to some degree, we realized that, you know, we had done enough at one point, but we couldn't just hold on. Like, this is the playoffs. This is one of the best teams in the league. So I think there started to be, you know, a little bit of a sense of tension and just trying to kind of, you know, hold on if we could. I mean, there's some part of us that felt like maybe the longer the game that went, you know, it wasn't going to necessarily play in our favor. And so I think there was a little bit of a conservative thought there and hoping that, you know, maybe we could force them to make a mistake or they would make a mistake before we did. There's a little bit of that feeling, I think, as that lead started to slip away.
Matt Prater kicked a field goal, on the first drive, or it was a long, freaking ridiculously long drive by Denver after Mike Wallace scored. Broncos, I mean, ran, you know, I think it was like 7 or 8 minutes off the clock and then finished with a 35-yard field goal, which is a pretty length. They were just eating up clock and eating up clock. Pittsburgh answered on the very next drive, mostly Ben fueling it, Isaac Redman with a 28-yard run on it, Antonio Brown getting involved, and Swisham hits a 37-yard field goal. At that point, Willis McGahee fumbles.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, he fumbled as Denver was trying to run out the ball, run out the clock, but really eat up clock. Like you can see it, like the seconds are like flying off, taking their time.
Up the first near the 50, and there is a nice shake move. Ball is out. McGahee fumbled, and Woodley has the recovery. It was Ryan Mundy who knocked it loose. And the Steelers have the football at the 44. With 7.5
Was it then, you know, down 7 points, B-Mac? Was it like, all right, we're down seven. We just got they just gifted it back to us. Now is time to take advantage.
No question. And, before that Willis McGahee fumble, our offense really started to find a rhythm. And, at that time it was like, okay, now we finally got some momentum. We slowed things down. We're playing our brand of football on both sides of the ball. And it was just a matter of time. And that is what we thought we would do. When you look at the third and fourth quarter, we felt like that's the entire ball game. That's how the entire ball game should have went. We started slow, just didn't even play any football in the second quarter. But then in the third and fourth quarter, it was like, okay, this is what we're supposed to do. And that fumble was like, okay, it wasn't about will we score. It was about when we will score. Because we felt like I said, the rhythm was there. And it was just a matter of time before Big Ben, you know, find one of those pass catchers. And, you know, hit the head on the goal. Yeah, Jericho Cotri. NC State boy.
Now, runs out of the pocket, goes to the end zone, and it is caught for the touchdown. Jericho Cotri, able to hold on to it from 31 yards out.
Yes. Cotri was a big time player for us.
FSU, probably, right?
No question. When Phillip Rivers was the quarterback.
Yeah. And this is like, dude, I mean, like, I know, like, Cotri caught the touchdown pass, but this was like, this is a wide receiver group for the Steelers that crossed over, like, I'll call it multiple generations. Cause you had Hines Ward was in his last year, Mike Wallace third year, Antonio Brown second year, Emmanuel Sanders second year, and then Jericho Cotri and Heath Miller is the tight end too. Like, that's a loaded pass catching group.
Loaded. And at that time, I think for 2011, I think AB,
was AB's first good season. Like he crossed over 1,000 yards.
Yeah, I think he was a team MVP at that time. Yep. I'm not mistaken. Yep. Yeah,
that is correct. So Big Ben hits Jericho Cotri on this 31-yard touchdown pass, and I think Nance and Sims point out at that moment that Big Ben actually wore number 7 because he idolized John Elway growing up, and here he is. He's about to rip the heart out of John Elway's, you know, first playoff team, shocking 8-8 squad, that gets there. Did you guys think, Brady, that you were toast after that touchdown pass?
Not really. Cause I mean, at that point we felt like we had been there before to a degree, like playing in tight games down the stretch. Like we'd been able to execute these miraculous comebacks. And so at some point you kind of felt comfortable in that scenario as opposed to like hanging on to a lead, like I said earlier, right. Like that was something that was kind of foreign to us.
Like it's almost better if it's like an insane bat bleep crazy situation. You just used
like,
to it.
Like we were down. We had to come back. Like we kind of played better that way. And so I don't know that there was any sense of panic. Like people kind of just were like, all right, been here before. Like this happens, you know, countless times throughout the course of the regular season. And we were at home. So obviously we had that to our advantage as well. And typically, and one of the things that I always think gets overlooked about that season and just, you know, Tim and his style of play and when things started to kick and he was special was when teams would come out there. And again, maybe Brian can speak to this. It's not the first half where you like would get quite as worn down from the altitude. It was the second half when you would be out there and then you would notice that you weren't recovered play after play after play, you know, as quickly. So your first 30, 40 snaps might not have been as bad. It was that next 20 or 25 that you're like, huffing and puffing and not recovering as fast as you were in the first half. And so that's where like when he would start to go off in the fourth quarter on teams run around scrambling, you know, he was always in great shape.
But I'll never forget Derek Johnson, linebacker for Kansas City, says, hey, this isn't a quarterback you go, I can't wait to hit him. Remember, he says, you are hitting an NFL running back.
And other teams would get worn down, especially at home, when it, whether it was the Jets, the Bears, or other teams earlier that year at home. All that, like, you were kind of watching guys have their hand on the hips, bent over, like they were tired. And like they just, you know, not that they gave up, but they just weren't in the same, you know, type of condition. So we kind of always felt like we had an advantage in that regard once it got kind of later in games.
Yeah. And so I'm curious too, Brady, did so on that final Broncos drive of the, you guys had the ball in the, in regulation, second and eight after a Willis McGahee 2 yard run on first down, 2:29 on the clock. I mean, you know, you guys threw the ball. Was it a plan like, hey, let's go for it and try to win this game? Or is it like sort of like, we got to be really careful here? You know what I mean? Cause you don't want to, like, you don't want to overplay your hand and have it, and like, didn't Tebow miss like a wide open, pass? Was it Royal or Thomas?
Oh, it was Eddie Royal on the sideline.
Yeah. I mean, just like,
the thing is like, you kind of felt like, if Tebow was holding on to the football, if it was a pass, right? If we talked about before, if the first option wasn't there, whether it's one high or two high, if he was holding on to the football to buy more time to make a throw, more often than not, like, good things weren't happening unless it was like a boot or it was design. If he was holding on to the football and running with it, like downfield, like that was a good thing. Like that always worked out for us. And so that was where you always kind of started to like, just, you know, sit there and say like, all right, like either run downfield, make something happen with your legs, or throw it away and live for another down. And so there's definitely some risk to that. But I mean, at that point, we were a wild card team. No one expected to be there. So I think we felt like we could be a little bit more aggressive. And that really plays into the play call for the first play we ended up running in overtime.
Yeah. And before you can get to overtime, of course, Ben Roethlisberger gets from the Pittsburgh 39, gets a 12-yard completion, so right about midfield, and, you know, you have 12 seconds left. You feel like the Steelers are going to be able to get some kind of field goal shot in there, and then I believe Robert Ayers came in and said, was it Ayers or Dumervil? Somebody came in and sacked Ben.
Well, I want to say before that, I believe it was Dumervil.
Oh, he was sacked by Dumervil that required the third timeout. That's what it was.
Roethlisberger wanted unloaded. The ball is out, and he falls on it. Back at the 43. Watch the clock here. It was Dumervil who knocked it loose.
Yeah, Dumervil knocked the football out. Ben fumbled it, jumped on it, required the timeout. And then I want to say Ayers might have gotten involved in that too. I think Vaughn on a play before that, maybe on a first down, had put them in second and long because of a sack.
Yeah. That's right. So they had gotten into Broncos territory, the Steelers did, and then he got sacked by Dumervil, and then they made another push up for a last second field goal. Didn't happen. Had to take it to go to overtime. I mean, but it, like at that point, everybody watching is thinking like, all right, like, you know, Tebow's had this magic going, but like the Pittsburgh has finally woken up. They figured it out. They're going to overtime and they're in trouble. And this is the first playoff game with the new playoff overtime rules.
In overtime, in the playoffs, there are unique playoff rules. Each team is entitled to an opportunity to possess the ball, with two exceptions. If the team on defense scores in any fashion, the game is over. If the team that gets the first possession scores a touchdown, the game is over. Otherwise, each team has to have the opportunity to possess the ball.
It's like, you know, you can, you know, you're thinking, you have to have a touchdown to win and walk off. You can't just walk off with a field goal anymore. And it's feeling fairly unlikely, like Denver's going to go out and just score immediately, right?
Right. I mean, but again, I think part of us felt like we could be aggressive with the play call, on first down.
And what was the play call?
So the play call was gun two on, zip, I believe. And it was ride 130, I believe what we call a needle. I think we called it thimble the year before, but it was needle. And so what we had was we had a post by Demaryius Thomas expecting post high coverage, from Pittsburgh. And then we had Eddie Royal, who was motioning down to make it look like run, cause we had a really, really high run percentage on first, second down, obviously. And so like he even pointed out like Troy Polamalu was down in the box. Like that was his man. He was going to block him. And then he releases up on a little, like we call it a prick route, but it was more like a curl route is how it looks. So. Literally, Troy's already down in the box. It looks like basically Pittsburgh is playing some version of zero coverage or four.
We were actually playing a coverage that we implement just for Denver and for Tim Tebow. We called it tight will me nine. Now, usually our tight will me concept will be called tight will me six. And tight will me six was basically a quarter half concept. Okay. Now, that quarter half concept, depending on the conversation between the weak side linebacker, inside backer, and the weak side corner, that could go into a lock situation where pass related routes that inside backer would lock and he cover the running back on any outside release to his side, and that corner would lock that number one receiver weak side. But in that quarter tight will me nine concept, and that look that you're talking about, Brady, we were so dialed in on that run, the heavy run you guys showed basically throughout the season, that we were anticipating run. Now, what happened was with Demaryius and Ike pressed Demaryius, if I'm not mistaken. And I think the safety that was down to Ike's side was Ryan Mundy, who usually would be Ryan Clark. But Ryan Mundy got too far in the box. And at that time, Ike was basically in a man-to-man situation with no help.
Right.
Because Troy was backside, but Troy was actually like the half safety. But Troy was doing what Troy usually does, and he was just kind of playing the look. But what happened was Demaryius did a great job getting inside leverage on Ike, and because Ryan Mundy was so far in the box, all Tim had to do was just put it where all the green grass was because there was nobody backside at all.
So Ike was actually playing an off coverage.
It was off. Okay.
It was off coverage. And the worst part about it is, and this is why I say it looked to us like it was, so some teams would play a version of zero,
Real quick, Brady. Demaryius had like a cut split, right? It wasn't a normal width split, right?
Well, he was playing off the ball. It wasn't really cut necessarily. It was condensed. It wasn't like a short.
Okay. Because usually Ike was a guy who would press a lot, but I was thinking that maybe it was a condensed split that made Ike get off a little bit, but also too, because of the leverage in that situation and tight will mean nine, Brady, it's imperative for the corner to stay inside because there's a good chance you might not have any help depending on where the quarter safety or half safety might get backside. But because of that condensed split, I think Ike was kind of playing it head up the outside and Demaryius ran a inside related route. And of course you can explain the rest.
Yeah. So really a lot of credit to Mike McCoy, and Adam Gase, because they were the ones kind of talking about being aggressive.
Two guys who could use a little credit lately.
Right. And really talking about, by the way, to that point, not to go on the tangent, but if you want to see the changeover in our offense from the first five games and what we installed in training camp to then what it was the rest of that season and for the playoff games, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, people need to understand the transformation with Mike McCoy and Adam Gase. Like, no one understands the work that was being put in after hours by those guys to be able to transform this offense to help Tim have a chance and have our team have a chance. So, Credit to them kind of seeing this too, because this is not necessarily one that we had, you know, perfect on our game plan sheet. We kind of talked about the look and what they were giving us out of that personnel, Detroit personnel, Detroit 81, I believe, and then that formation. And so we wanted to go with it thinking probably getting some sort of form of post safety. And then to us, it looked like more of a version, like I was saying before, of zero or cover four is what we would tag it because of the leverage that Ike was playing with on the outside. And the safeties being so low, because teams typically did that. But then what they do is if they were going to play zero, those safeties would basically play the run or they'd blitz. And they would bring, and then it would put pressure on Tebow and force him to get the ball out. And that's where a lot of teams had success. Well, Pittsburgh didn't do either. You know, they had those safeties down deep, like Brian said, and they didn't force the football out, but they weren't helping their cornerbacks out in coverage either. So they left them on islands. And then worst yet, Ike had outside leverage. And so Demaryius Thomas, the way he played that game that year, and really that was, you know, hitting into the sweet spot of his career. I mean, that dude with that size, that sort of explosiveness, Tim just, you know, put the football out there, let him go catch it and go run to it, almost dead down the middle of the field. And the rest is history, man.
Got him at the 40. It's Thomas at the 50. Stiff arm, got him three to the 30, to the 20. Thomas to the 10. Denver's going on the New England.
And it was quite possibly one of the craziest things to witness and kind of see when you take into everything that had gone on that entire year and had accumulated up to that point.
I mean, it's one of those moments that's like, it's almost indelible just because you can easily picture this, the camera's low, the CBS camera's low, and you can just see like Demaryius Thomas, and he's got the ball, and he was had one guy to beat, Ike Taylor, and he beats him, and he's gone. Like, he's to the races. Like, it's like, you know, as soon as they make the connection and make the throw, that it's over. What were the emotions of being on that sideline, BMAC, and see, like, cause you know, right? You see it and you're like, oh my God, our season just ended.
Yeah. When Tebow hit Demaryius in stride, and because of the coverage and the way how, you know, the secondary was lined up, and Ike is a fast guy, but Demaryius, and Brady can talk about his speed, is a fast guy as well. And that was one of the best passes I think I saw from Tim Tebow the entire year. Because if he does not hit Demaryius in stride, Ike makes the tackle, and then we get a chance to play football again. And because of the new rules, of course, you know, who knows what could have happened. But because how he hit Demaryius in stride, we were looking like, oh, dang. Like, just try to get him down. But because of the speed, I mean, and the drilling, it was one of those oh no moments. I mean, we did not expect to lose the ball game that way at all.
You could feel the stadium. You could feel the energy. You felt like this, almost like you, through your body, like the type of emotion that ran through everyone and the excitement. It was just crazy. I mean, and just even the emotions of the game were kind of a summary of almost the emotions of the year in a way, just the way everything kind of went for us. So that was one of the craziest things, kind of just seeing, witnessing.
It wasn't that. It was definitely one of his best throws of the year, but it wasn't even that great of a throw. Like, he definitely like threw it behind Demaryius to a degree, right?
I don't know. I mean, it didn't really matter. He was so wide open. I always say, right, like, for quarterbacks, sometimes the hardest throws to make are the ones where there's no one around, because you lack as much focus as you typically need on a lot of throws in the NFL. So I could care less about where the ball was. It was just, it went to the right guy, and it went at the right time.
The aftermath of that, you know, it's crazy too, because, you know, what, like, do you think John Elway wanted to get rid of Tim Tebow? I mean, like, he clearly did. He eventually brought in Peyton to get rid of him. But, like, you go and win a playoff game like that, and there's all this chatter about Tebow mania, blah, 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 blah. There was an oral history written about it, I think in GQ, maybe. I don't really remember.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the fact. You're going to bring up the Mike Silver interview.
In fact, I distinctly remember in the summer after the 2011 season, I'm pretty sure I wrote an article about you, but like the beef between you and Mike Silver, a mini beef, not a real beef.
He basically had a conversation where he took some things A, out of context, and B, like, you know, I didn't even say, just like, for example, if you had asked me in an interview, like, for, I think he asked if, and there were so many things that where I was complimentary about something, but that didn't fit with his piece. And so he did put that in there. And so he would literally take things out of context, or he'd chop some things off to take away whatever fit this narrative that he wanted to create. And so that was what upset me about the whole thing was. And then when I pressed back and said, well, then show me the tape, show me the interview, show me the recording you've got, Mike, if you recorded it. And he knew it. He didn't want to press it and make a bigger issue or make a legal issue. But here's the whole backstory to this. So I remember when it came out, and I remember talking to like Patrick Smyth and talking to John Fox and everyone else, like, they weren't really concerned. Like, they weren't really that upset with it, and not necessarily because of the way the article was written, just because I think they knew they were going to be moving on from them. And so for that reason, like, I think they kind of knew that they were going to go after Peyton. That was their plan. They were moving forward. And it is crazy to think, like, how I don't know that they could have moved on from Tim to anyone but Peyton. As crazy as that sounds,
you're 100% right.
He had such a hold over just the hype and everything around that city that they had to bring in a Hall of Famer in order to like replace him, because he was that like polarizing of a figure. Like, there are people who loved him. There are people who, you know, weren't as big of fans, but either way, like, the way the games went, it was kind of like must watch. And so
it had to be somebody like Peyton Manning for everybody to be like, well, it's Peyton Manning.
Right.
Like, otherwise, it would be like, you can't do it. Tebow's the heart and soul of this team. And by the way, Brady, just for the record, the things you said, even the stuff that like Silver put in the article, which is, we've had a lot of, I guess, luck, to put it simply. And I felt like fans had a lot to do with Tebow.
Let me take exception with that. I never said that.
Oh.
He actually said, so basically you guys, you know, you felt like you guys got lucky. And I said, yeah, you could say that. That's how I responded to it.
That's not the same thing.
Exactly. It's not the same thing. And as a writer, like, you would acknowledge that, right? And that's where I felt like there were so many times where, and by the way, he's got a reputation for that. So, you know, I'm not the first person to ever say that. And I was warned by people after that and people before that about him. So again, like, it's fine. You know, I've got a cordial relationship with Mike. There's, you know, it is what it is, but there were times when that was my beef about that whole article was there was things like that were taken out of context or, I mean, essentially kind of made up.
Well, and I think too, like just thinking about, because you were the backup quarterback, the veteran backup quarterback. You're having to watch Tebow Mania unfold on the depth chart above you. And you know, I mean, like, I think it was easy to perceive. It was easy to buy into the narrative that at the time, like, I know it. I know, I believe it's like, I don't believe the narrative now, especially like, hey, that Tebow's been booted to the curb. And I know you, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't a difficult sell to the public.
Sure. Well, and that's the thing is, like, people didn't realize that, like, I was sitting after meetings after he was gone, they were gone, watching Oregon film, watching West Virginia film, watching old Florida film to help Adam Gase come up with different concepts and game plans that Tim could succeed in. Like, yeah. People never saw that. People never saw me. You know what that year was? You remember the Geno Smith push pass to Tavon Austin that they utilized like probably five times for touchdowns at a game?
Yep.
I had tried so hard to get the fly sweep pass in that year for us. I even think I got it in a game plan once. I got it to Gase, and I think we got it into a game plan once. And we practiced it, but then never ran it. But that was my whole thing was, I was like, look, it's the fly sweep. Everyone's doing this. Let's do it from a pass, though, like they're doing at West Virginia. And so it'll help us completion percentage, and we can get Eddie on an edge, and Eddie Royal will be able to run with speed. And so there was, like, different things like that that, like, we would try to come up with. But, like, again, those are things that people don't see because they weren't there, and they want to, you know, buy into that narrative.
How about from y'all's side, BMAC? Was it – I mean, did it feel like that loss had a – I mean, did that loss have any sort of – aftershocks, like longer term, this, you know, next year, Pittsburgh went 8-8. I mean,
it was a tough loss because we were just in the championship game the year before. We were 12-14, clearly had the same record as the Baltimore Ravens, but they won a division. So we already felt slighted. And then losing to that Denver Broncos team led by Tim Tebow, knowing that the Denver Broncos had no shot of going to Foxborough and beating the Patriots. Mm-hmm. That was the most disturbing thing for us. It was like we matched up well against the Patriots. As a matter of fact, I think we played the Patriots that year, if I'm not mistaken, in Pittsburgh, and I think we beat them.
So we did, in fact, beat the Patriots 25-17 at home in week 8 that year.
Yeah, so for us, it was like I don't want to say we overlooked the Broncos, but we were very, very confident. We felt like the way we lost, we knew the Patriots had a shot of getting to the championship because clearly Tim Tebow would not beat the New England Patriots. And that was the most disappointing thing outside of the loss. Brady was like, if we took care of our business, regardless, just win the ball game, we loved our chances against the Patriots to potentially get right back to another championship opportunity.
Yeah. And remember, that was the Billy Cundiff 32-yard shank the following week by the Patriots after they beat the crap out of the Broncos.
Terrible, but has like Pittsburgh recovered since then?
That's a good point, Brady. They've made it to AFC Championship game since then. I think it was against the Patriots that when Le'Veon Bell tore his groin. I think that was an AFC Championship game.
Was that?
But outside of game? Was that maybe 14? Maybe 14 or something like that.
Yeah, 2016 they lost in the conference championship game.
16.
To the Pats, the 36-17, yikes.
Yeah, when Lev Bell went out early with that groin. Right. But outside of that, they've made some playoff appearances. But, you know, 2011 was the last legit, I think, championship opportunity outside of that 2016 game.
So the Denver Broncos, only 8-8 in the regular season. All the home teams win on Wild Card Weekend. And Tebow once again writes the perfect script at the end.
That would be the last perfect script for Tim Tebow in his professional football career. Tebow Mania sputtered the next week in a humiliating 45-10 loss to the Patriots in the divisional round. March of 2012 featured another blow as the Broncos signed Peyton Manning, marking the end of Tebow's time in Denver and essentially as an NFL quarterback. Our pal Brady Quinn joined the Chiefs the following year, and as for BMAC, well, that Demaryius Thomas TD was the final play of his career. Thanks to those guys for sharing their memories. If you enjoyed the episode and want to rewatch the game with new details fresh in mind, you're in luck. On Saturday, April 18th at 10 p.m. Eastern on CBS Sports Network, Broncos Steelers will be re-aired. Tune in for classic NFL games on the CBS Sports app or CBSSports.com by logging in with your provider. If there's a classic game you want us to rewatch and discuss on the Pick 6 podcast, let us know by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. As always, thanks for listening and talk to you guys soon.